Welcome to the Lesbo and the Bean universe. Lesbo and the Bean. LATB. Lat B. Where mixed martial arts and the UFC get silly. Big silly. Buckle up and move your tray tables to their upright position. And please, somebody shut that baby up. It's time for Lesbo and the Bean.
Welcome back. Great episode on the way. Episode 109.
Wow.
Pay-per-view on the way. We got a heavy-duty breakdown. We got 13 fights, but there has been so much MMA news. I want to ask you real quick, how have you been since we last met?
I'm doing all right.
What do you want to get off first? Because there's so much.
I know.
There's so much going on
after,
in the MMA.
You know, we talked about KGB's boyfriend last time, and after talking about that husband, boyfriend, whatever.
Life partner.
Partner. So I feel like once we talked about that, we can kind of get into anything with a little bit of comfort.
Which we already talked about a bit. We broke down on
it. So that, I feel like since we crossed that bridge, sure. I think the hottest issue right now is the new weight cut stuff.
As far as Dana White talking about that he's going to get rid of the early morning weigh-ins.
Yeah, I think that's the hottest topic on...
Well, that's mega changing because it does affect the fighters. It gives them 24 hours more or less. It does change the time frame that they have to weigh in. It could give them less time because when they weighed in at 9 a.m. the day earlier, they had up until 8 to do then the superficial weigh-ins, which gave them an extra 36 hours overall, where now if they weigh in at 8 p.m., they got 24 hours to hydrate. Those extra hours help. Or not. It all depends on the weight-cutting
styles.
I've
also heard the argument of the fighters have to get up at a certain time and to cut weight. So a lot of them were having to get up at like a 6 a.m. to get their final cut in and sleep dehydrated.
Very
which
true.
Isn't necessarily great.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's horrible to sleep dehydrated. And you don't sleep well.
This might be a rookie question. Yeah, I think we'd have a lot of fights fall out the first couple of fights. But why isn't there a scale out just right outside the cage?
Because they already have done that a few times?
No, that's where they weigh in.
Oh, we've talked about this here multiple times
over. But only
over.
For the fight
Same
fall.
Hour.
If you didn't get the... If you didn't get paid, if you don't fight in the octagon, and if you don't make weight, you don't fight, and that just became across the board, and
yep.
There was a scale, within your fight hour. Because I don't... I also think the ceremonial weigh-ins, I was thinking about this, and they have their... top card fighters weighing in last after Joe and Dana and whoever yammer on about whatever for so long.
About what new subscription you have to subscribe to.
So now, because most of the fighters are only getting to that weight for however many minutes they need to be on the scale.
Right.
So to have your highest guys, your guys that you want to perform the most, the guys on the main card, have to stand around the longest dehydrated waiting to take that sip of water. And then to go out there and be interviewed by Joe and do all this. Selfishly, I miss the real weigh-ins. It mattering on stage.
I agree. I always have loved the one-time weigh-ins and having that be an event and be open to the public as well, because then you get those spectacular reminiscent moments of the crowd getting together for their one fighter, usually being the hometown guy who they get behind. But the evolution of the sport, the deals that are being made, ESPN, people dropping knowledge. We were breaking down a little bit Chael Sonnen's mass media production and how he finds a way to keep himself in the limelight. Colby's going to fight soon. Let Chael get a word in real quick. Talk about some backdoor shit nobody cares about. What do you think about it? He said he was offered $1 million by WWE to... not walk out on the Anderson Silva, or to walk out on the Anderson Silva fight. And he said he didn't because he's a company man. Good for him. Why do you need to tell that story? Unless you're trying to throw somebody under the fucking bus. Mainly being your, not employee because, or employer, because he went to Bellator, not WWE, but just some shady ass, again, Chael, no reason, Colby from Oregon? Where's he from? Oh, let's talk about Westland real quick.
And he says, let's say the WWE offered him that, and then they can come back now and say, we didn't offer him that, but now the WWE's talking about Chael Sonnen, and he fucking wins
all the way around. And I wonder if Colby realizes this going on, which I know we're going to definitely get to him later on tonight, but if you guys haven't been watching those embeddeds, we're going to probably cue in a couple of those times throughout the breakdown, but catching some really interesting breakdowns and mental warfare going on specifically with that Dos Años Colby Covington fight. I am psyched. Super psyched.
With Rafi Dos Nachos.
Nerd Bashing season 2018, baby. I love it.
Ralphie Dos Nachos.
He has some really funny catchphrases.
I honestly have to say, too, on the embeddeds, he reminds, like, I don't care if, or Conor McGregor or Chael Sonnen, he is quick with the lines where he actually cracks me up sometimes.
Yes, I totally laugh. And it's one of those cringy laughs, but it still makes me laugh. And we need those bad guys. You can't have all good guys because that's no fun. You need the Jokers. You need the Penguins. And
well, that's real life.
It is real
life. That's real life. Everybody likes to see themselves in something. It's why they like heroes or the protagonist in a movie or whatever. And some of those guys, you might see your mortal enemy, which makes you tune in. They always say the people that hate you are more likely to watch.
He's getting a lot of that. Yeah. He's getting a lot of viewers, I'm telling you what.
But I really think this sets up for the most interest. He is right. He is livening up a division that was kind of a snooze fest for a while. So you have T. Woods, who way until Colby was getting the most amount of hate, probably up there in the UFC of haters. Mm-hmm. Everybody hates T. Woods. Colby easily might be taking that crown from him of the most hated guy. So all of a sudden, everyone, I hate T. Woods. I won't watch T. Woods do another fight. He's so boring. I hate him. I hope Colby loses. I hope these are probably the same people. So once they fight each other, it puts a conundrum in their head. Who do you want to win or who do you want to lose?
Right.
At some point, some of the most interesting times aren't when your two favorites get in the octagon. It's when your two least favorites get in. So I think for some people, that adds intrigue and backstory is the most fun. That's why everybody loves all these fights, because the backstory, the drama.
With the drama, we got
not
to
just
it.
Drama, obviously. You want to see the two best guys.
You do want to see the two best guys.
But their rankings are so flawed that you really are seeing who they are saying is a champ, and this guy's fighting this guy for this, and now they're talking about a tournament maybe, but Tony Ferguson was not even included. It was GSP, Nate Diaz, Connor, and Khabib. So I'm like, okay, so you got a guy that everyone's... I have to GSP hate for a second.
And just to say real quick, that source is coming from Ariel Helwani, who tends to be fairly vetted, I believe. He's the one who posted about this so-called tournament. I did see information about that, which I'm saying I love, but Mr. Scott Coker might be showing UFC a thing or two, but because of that. WSOF is also doing that stuff, but as you were saying...
I agree, but that you have to give full Scott Coker credit, because this is the most interesting thing that's happened in Bellator is that tournament, and at first I was like, huh, and the longer it goes, the closer it gets to the end, the more intrigue that I'm built for each fight. I've started watching Bellator a little bit, so I think that, so now you do that with superstars. Interesting. I'm down with the whole idea. Don't really care about rankings. Everybody praises GSP. Everybody's like, and GSP sat on Joe Rogan. Oh, I like to do stuff that is hard. It has to intrigue me, Joe Rogan. I want to do the hard thing. When I sit back, honestly, and who do you think, honestly, who's a harder fight, T. Woods or Bisping?
T. Wood? Is this a trick question?
No, that's what I say. So if I'm GSP and I only want to do the stuff that is hard for me, that's T. Woods. It's not Bisping. So in my head, I'm looking at GSP like, of course, people want money fights, whatever, but he's taking the easiest fight. So you want to set up a tournament with a guy that fought at 185, but a natural 170-pounder, a guy that hasn't fought since he was maybe at the highest point of his career, number 6 in the division, and then he fought Conor McGregor twice, one time on short notice. He's in the tournament. The guy that wears the belt now because he beat Aya Quinta with the whatever because he's in the tournament. And the guy they stripped the belt from, but he's never defended any belt he's had. Let's put them in it, but not Tony Ferguson. Sorry.
I totally agree 100%.
That was a big soapbox.
It makes... no sense. It's another cash grab, and they're getting... I like that the UFC is doing some of these things because the same old thing doesn't always keep working, and right now when all the divisions have been in such turmoil, especially with the rankings, this might not be the best idea, but at least it shows that there's movement going on. Something's happening. So it keeps me very intrigued. It keeps us talking here. Tons of other fun stuff has gone out. Yair's been trying to get blown up by all sorts of people because... I don't know. Ariel was also talking about, like, I want to tell the story, but not the whole backstory. And it got pretty funky. Joe Rogan had a really fun podcast, got super baked with Sean Sugar O'Malley. And did you end up listening to any of that podcast? Yeah, it was a good one.
It was all right.
Yeah. I'm not walking away with anything new, but...
It wasn't my favorite. It wasn't even in the top five UFC stars who've been on Joe Rogan's podcast. Agreed. But... interesting. I love seeing the relationship between him and his best friend slash training coach slash partner.
Big brother.
Cool. I like Sugar Shane. I think he has his head on straight. I think he's asking a lot of questions, super open-minded, and I really like that in people. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be like a good thing for fighters. Yeah. I didn't have to hear too many archery stories, not too much about hunting.
I actually only download people that I know now, or I'll look to see who he's interviewing, and if those look fairly dull, which you can tell right away, if it's a hunter, I've been on this soapbox a few times. You don't need to watch. You know what's going to go down.
Well, and you know what else? Didn't hear him say one time, we're spinning 1,000 miles an hour, going 10,000 miles in this direction. Yeah, so, but I listened. It was all right. It was all right.
Any last things?
Misha Tate had a baby.
Congratulations, Mama Misha. There was also
said that last time.
We did. There was also another baby info.
Double baby. Oh, set Cowboys girl's pregnant.
McMahon is on her way to have a secondary child as
Whoa.
Well. Sarah McMahon is pregnant. She said she will be fighting again after that.
Huh.
Wow. So 9 months, a year away from her next fight at 36 years old. Gonna be making some money. Get Sarah McMahon.
Gonna make some money. Take care of that baby. To take care of that baby money.
But what else? Any other last hot topics? Nothing hot.
Nothing's as hot as UFC 225.
It is a fun one. Is this bad of me? Am I the only one doing this? Because I'm like, yay, I'm really psyched, but I see a lot of really one-sided fights, kind of, and I'm already looking at 226.
I'm kind of looking at 226 as well, but I'm really intrigued about a couple of fights on this card. I will talk about them when we get to them. We'll talk about certain hate on things. But I think there's so much going on this card that I'm going to try not to say too much shit about people that they don't need to be said about. I'll try to keep my side short so you can tell the people what they need to know until it matters.
So, we're going to have a 13-card bout coming on Fight Pass, FS1, and finishing up on pay-per-view. We're coming out of Chi-Town. Hopefully, it's not a Chi-Rock out of there. Don't watch that movie. You're saving yourself 2 hours. You're welcome. Let be. Biggest movie we did today.
Do not watch that movie.
Watch that movie. Nick Cannon.
Awful.
Go back to Radio Shack, homeboy. So, with that, we got a heavy-duty breakdown. Breakdown. This is two belts in contention, one of them for an interim.
Ugh.
Couple debuts. I am going to say, though,
an interim for no reason, but okay.
Right? There is a very unique situation here on a pay-per-view where you are going to see literally the lowest talented fight of all time on a pay-per-view is going to happen. So for those historic reasons alone, you should be watching. We have an 0-1, an 0-1 UFC fighter fighting on a pay-per-view above former title contenders.
My argument for it is I want the fighters to make the most amount of money and they want the sport to get the most amount of eyes. So if that's CM Punk being on the card, okay. Okay.
Okay.
I'm okay with it. And I'm sure anyone who's carrying a belt right now is stoked about it. Because they get part of that pay-per-view buy.
That's a good point. He does bring in an audience. And we are talking about CM Punk.
And if 300,000 people decide to watch the sport that never have watched before, maybe that's, you know, 1,000 new listeners for Lesbo and the Bean.
I'm just saying real quick, if there was a figure in our sport right now that was doing the heel WWE turn right now, it's Colby Covington, who is also on this card. So guess who's going to be watching? Somebody who is going to be ripe, ready for a bunch of nerds and virgins to come along his way on the social following. He is going to antagonize. I'm excited. From the bottom to the top, though, we start at the 145-pound division. We have two former fighters in Mike Santiago coming off the Contender Series against Daniel Ige. Santiago, though, has fought twice in the UFC, though both of his losses in the UFC are to Zabit Magomed Shayapov and Bochniak in a decision. Those two guys, off the top of my head, way better than most people give him credit for.
What about Mads Burnell?
Oh, sorry. Did I say Bochniak?
Yeah.
It's Burnell. Correct. Mads Burnell is the last opponent, but we just saw Burnell almost beat AAA, and Burnell really looks like a top-level competitor, even though with his last recent loss. So, initially, I was fading Santiago because he's an all-around good striker. On the ground is where he likes to make his money. Against Dan Ige coming out of Hawaii, that whole Hawaii scene, I don't think the ground game is going to favor him all that much. Ige really likes to get into the ground if he can and win via submission. Striking-wise, Ige has more power, but is more rudimentary in his strikes. And Santiago is a 1-2 punch combination kind of guy. He doesn't get past that 3 or 4 strikes in a row. And for me, Santiago's pace has really struggled in the last few fights. But those competitors, now looking back at it, are definitely higher level, where Dan Ige ended up getting his first loss in the UFC, and he's rebounding from that, having a fairly good record. This is going to be a real close one. I think this is going to be a general lat B, stay away. There's many other ways to make money. I'm going to go with Ige by decision. I know he's the favorite, but I'm thinking Santiago is way more serviceable and a tough guy. He's not going to quit on himself, never has. I'm going Ige decision. How do you feel this one ends up?
Santiago decision right now. I also agree this is a lap B, stay away, especially because we split on it. I have Santiago decision. I just think his cardio is going to hold up better as the fight goes on, and I'm questioning Ige's cardio. He either has a quick finish or is quick finished. So I have Santiago decision.
I am actually going to backtrack on that real quick. Just open up my tap. I got Santiago decision. But I'm squeaking it. I know that Ige is actually a favorite in this spot. The exact amount is Ige is -135 against the +115 Santiago. Into deeper waters, I think Ige does also struggle in the cardio aspect a little bit more. So stay away. On to the 155-pound division. We have a short-notice fighter, Charles Oliveira, stepping in for... Who was it?
I don't remember.
It is the African-American fighter. Not Showtime. Bobby Green.
Oh.
Stepping in for Bobby Green against Clay Guida, the Carpenter himself, is coming in. Both of these fighters have had many, many fights in the UFC. Charles Oliveira coming in with a 22-8 record against Clay Guida's 34-17. Both of these veterans have fought the best of the best, been former contenders. They're both trying to climb on the way up, but I kind of see them both capping out. They're both the epitome of a gatekeeper for me. You know how we feel about Charles Oliveira here. Amazing Muay Thai, amazing ground game. Biggest weakness is the mental aspect, and a short notice fight doesn't help somebody who's mentally weak against the guy who's been at Alpha Male, has the wrestling on point to do exactly what Paul Felder did in his last fight, and that is just break the will.
It says Elevation Fight Team on here. Did he move?
Oh, Clay Guida?
Yeah.
He jumps around. I
can't really run with Tapology because they're so off sometimes on their information.
He has been at Elevation, and I have seen footage of him with guys in that area, but Clay Guida bounces around. He's never been one of those
traveling samurai.
Exactly. We know what we're getting with Guida. It's that takedown city, and he's going to break you, and that's exactly how you beat Oliveira. I'm going to stay away from this fight, but I am going with Clay Guida to win a decision here. This is going to be boring. Got to be careful off of your back. Oliveira can submit the best of them. He's done it multiple times before. Striking-wise, Clay Guida can get knocked out here. There's a sketchy-ass split decision fight. How do you feel it goes down?
You're almost going against a glass jaw versus soft body, in my opinion.
Who's who?
I think Clay Guida has a glass jaw, and I think Charles Oliveira has a soft body. I think Clay Guida does work from the bottom up. I think he goes in round one, picks apart the legs, he gets body shots in his combinations. Something's coming together for him over his last two fights that I really like. And when you look at his losses, they're against guys that are next level. I kind of think Charles Oliveira is not, I don't see him heading in a progressive path anymore. You reminded me also about the quit in him, it's both those things. Guida, I like the heart more here. I got Guida KO, end of round two.
Woo! And we're going with a slight underdog here, even though he is not the replacement. Charles Oliveira, 8,400 on DraftKings against Clay Guida's 7,800. This is going to be an interesting one.
This has bias on it for me because I really am just an Oliveira hater. Not a hater. Not that I'm a hater, but I'm just like, I don't like to put him anywhere.
There's a big chink in his armor, and he's definitely...
And we see it.
Exactly. If we see it, a lot of other people see it. And Clay Guida is tailor-made to exploit that type of a fight. Somebody who just needs to be dirty, tough, and in there. And he's done it before. Moving on to the flyweight division, 125. We have Sergio Pettis against former title contender Joseph Benavidez, the one Slim Shady, the only Slim Shady. If you only eat and Shady, I eat your little Shady.
I was like,
I don't remember the lyrics anymore. It's been a while. Somewhat Prozac.
I thought you were going to change the lyrics for Joey B.
Oh, no. Nope. I was just a little
freestyle. I was waiting for a little, like, I thought it was going to be like Megan, like, it was going to go through.
How do you think Megan O'Leary feels about Joey B's hairstyle? New hairstyle, which is actually blonde. He's gone to the dirty blonde.
I have to see it myself before I can judge what she would
do. Oh, you haven't seen it? It's a horrible look. It's trash.
Is it copper?
No, it's actually blonde, like a dirty blonde. The copper highlights on the end of it, I would say. Yep.
It might be okay.
So he used to do it in high school, he said.
And sometimes you can't really tell until the roots start to come in how cool a bleached out haircut will look, especially on a dark person. So once they start getting their like brown roots underneath the bleach, it starts looking a little better. Yeah, it's just looking that like punk rock.
What I don't like about it is that it looks like mine right now, except a little longer on the sides. And if you're going to dye it and cut it. Like, don't just dye it. Like, make it look clean, because it's just pumpkin headish right now to me is what it looked like.
Like, it's just flat. It doesn't have any definition.
Yeah, it's just like one round. Yeah, exactly. It's not a haircut. It's just the dye job.
Maybe she did it then. Maybe he didn't go somewhere and get it done.
He said he did it.
Maybe she came home and was like,
that's exactly what I think. She was just like, damn, that's CTE, homie.
You needed to put some toner in it. You can't just add bleach to your head.
I'm just thinking she's just like, babe, we're going to go to the doctor. That CTE is setting in, buddy. But with Baby Pettis himself coming in with a big win against Moreno, lost to Cejudo in a decision his last fight 5 months ago out of Chicago. The Baby Pettis is actually showing that he might be better than Big Pettis. We know what we're getting with him. Okay, takedown defense. On the ground, serviceable. Not that he can defend submissions and put some submissions on you, but that's not where Pettis likes to go. He definitely likes to keep it striking, and it's very Taekwondo-esque. It has good power in his kicks. Punches doesn't really hurt you all that much. Joseph Benavidez, I mean, the number two in the division, other than Demetrius Johnson, Joseph Benavidez is the guy there. Cejudo's making a case for himself now, but he just decisioned Baby Pettis. So I think this is a telltale sign. If Benavidez can get Baby Pettis out of there, it's just more proof that Cejudo, I'm going to make money against Cejudo because he's going to be the favorite against Benavidez, which we've seen. Joey B's won again. All-around fighter. He is master of all trades, or what is it? Jack of all trades, master of none. He doesn't really stick out anywhere. Can finish you from any position on the ground standing. I believe he's also at Elevation Top Team, and it doesn't say that on the Tapology, but I know for a fact that he was one of those first guys. But he has one of those open door relationships, and other fighters have called him and a couple other guys out there like, why can you go back and forth and other people can't? And it's because Joey B's been there from the get-go. He's just like, I started this before you guys were around, so you can't tell me nothing.
Don't judge me.
Can't tell me nothing, homie. So I'm going with Joey B. Decision all the way around. I think he's just going to show Baby Pettis all of what's what. It's going to be another decision, but Pettis can beat a lot of other guys in here. It's the number two fighter against the number six or seven. How do you feel this goes down?
Agree. The only reason we were talking about it earlier, we were saying rankings don't matter, and it's obvious right here because Joey B is the hard... he's the number one contender in the division. He's the number two guy behind Demetrius Johnson. So, yeah, they just have to keep changing it up. And it's so funny how this is the only division that they feel the need to keep changing it up and giving Demetrius new opponents, yet we see Woodley fight Wonder Boy over and over again. You know what I mean? It's like no one wants... Demetrius, sorry, you got to go two more fights to come back to Demetrius. That's the way we do it around here. So,
It's a tough division. Joey Benavidez being 9,000 on DraftKings against the 7-2 for Pettis. I don't know. That's steep. You almost need a finish or over 90 points, where Joey B is a plus 77 against top-level contenders. So you know he's going to be above that 60-point mark.
Guaranteed. I love Joey Benavidez in this fight, actually. I think this is just going to make Sergio that much better going forward. I agree with you. I think he is better than his brother. I think his age per competition should show that. And fighting in the 125, so young, with the ability to be able to move up, this just makes him better going on. I don't think either guy's a finisher, but I do think both have fast enough hands and maybe a couple takedowns and reversals to get the points up there. Benavidez decision.
Moving on to the 205-pound division, we have former belt holder Rashad Evans coming in against Anthony the Lion Smith. Rashad Sugar is definitely on a four-fight losing streak, being 19-7. Those four fights have been fairly dramatic. Actually, I think he did get a decision loss as of late, split to Alvey. We made a bunch of money here at LatB seeing that. Why did we see that was going to be a decision for Alvey? Because Rashad Evans' knees, his body is done, been a longtime wrestler, fought up in weight, had issues, has openly talked about a lot of training things. He just didn't know what he was doing because it was a young sport, and this is a young man's sport. Rashad Evans is an old player at this point of his life. Anthony Smith is an up-and-comer. His trajectory is definitely on the way up. He likes to keep it striking, has heavy hands, has heavy knees, gotten his gas tank underweight, is a bit more hittable than I'd like to see for Anthony Smith. Coming off of a lost TKO 3 months ago to Santos, that was a barn burner of a fight. Anthony Smith can be outground as well, though. That did happen earlier on in his career, and he's really gotten his gas tank in line, which has helped him out in his last few wins. But he doesn't have to worry about the power here, even for Rashad Evans. Evans hasn't showed that power in many fights, and unfortunately, this is just feeding food to the lion, and it's unfortunate to Rashad Evans. You are one of these guys that's in the Bisping boat that needs to get on out of here, sir. You need to go, and it's for your own health. Please move on to bigger and better things if you can, or get a trade. But this isn't it for you anymore, sir. How do you feel it goes down?
What do you have going on?
I got a TKO round number one.
Wow. Anthony Smith.
The takedown might be there the first round only, and then it's done. Those knees, I think it could be a TKO due to Rashad Evans blowing out a knee on a shot.
Whoa.
I'm not even joking. Been hearing rough rumors that every single camp is the best one he's ever looked, and then after he loses, he says, actually, I couldn't feel my arms for 3 days. I couldn't feel my left butt cheek for this time. I did all this and this and this just to get in there because I need the money. Wrongest reason to get in there.
I have Smith decision. I just think Daniel Kelly has a better ground game than Smith, and Rashad went all the way with him, and Sam Alvey has harder hands than Smith, and he went all the way with him. So I'm giving Smith the decision here just because Rashad is cashed. But I don't know what Anthony Smith has really shown me yet that I'm super stoked on, so I'm not going to get... I am nervous that he could punch himself out in round one, and Rashad still does have a better ground game. It's a little nerve-wracking.
I could see those takedowns. If his knees stay together, he can win that via the decision, boring route. Anthony Smith, get out ground. For 9,200 for Anthony Smith against the 7,000 Rashad Evans, are you thinking about playing Rashad at all?
No. I'm not putting Rashad anywhere. I just am not really... Smith won't be my expensive
for
guy.
For TKO round one, I'm thinking that you can pay that off for Smith. There's going to be some close plays throughout the night, so he's going to be on the back burner, but I think that finish is going to come. On to the heavyweights. We have Rashad Coulter against Chris De La Rocha. This is arguably any other card this gets put on this fight. It is the lowest caliber fighters in the UFC, except this card. I really, really, really dislike both of these fighters. The heavyweight division has been lacking in a long time, and nothing against these gentlemen. All the heavyweight divisions in all of UFC or MMA in general are lacking, and that's because if you can move and you're a big boy, you're making millions of dollars playing another sport.
Truth.
Like, there's way more other stuff to do. And these guys are both wrestlers. De La Rocha definitely being a long-time wrestler. 4-2, he's only had 6 pro fights in all, both of his losses coming in the UFC against Daniel Omelianchuk and a year 11 months ago, Adam Milstead, TKO punches. Rashad Coulter came off of a knockout to Tai Tuivasa 6 months ago, and then prior to that, he ended up losing his debut against Chase Sherman a year ago. Chase motherfucking Sherman! You know how I feel about Chase Sherman. He lost to Chase Sherman. That should tell you everything you need to know. Coulter can keep his standing if he needs to. He has more power. De La Rocha has power just because he's a heavyweight. But the least athletic guy that I've seen constantly out of these two is De La Rocha. They both like to wrestle, but I'm going to give the slight athletic ability to Coulter there. I am staying away from this fight so much, but I do think De La Rocha is the absolute worst fighter at the heavyweight division. Other than CM Punk in the UFC, De La Rocha's in that bottom 10, legitimately. So he's tried to use his wrestling before because he has wrestling accolades.
CM Punk?
And it doesn't work.
Do you think you could beat CM Punk?
Fuck yeah, I could beat CM Punk. Any day of the week, I'll beat CM Punk.
Really?
Any day of the week.
Really?
Any fucking day of the week.
He's been training full time every day.
I would beat CM Punk. I don't want to be that asshole that does that on our show and is like, I'm going out to you because I'm not. But I could see the technique and where he was. I have years of training that he is just... He can't catch... Not that he can't catch up, because he can. And I'm not that good. But I'm better than that guy.
But what about... You don't think, like, a great coaching squad, for, like, somebody you just take them in for 5 years full-time, that's their life, they can get anywhere with that?
Yeah, true. And maybe I am jumping the gun just because he had such a bad performance. And I remember
watching
all that.
We didn't get to see a lot in the octagon.
Tape. They did a whole tape run up that we didn't get to due to his legal issues going on this time. That was showing Ronda Rousey level striking in there. Not even, because the power wasn't even there. She had looked like she had more power in her punches by far with the pads. He has, though, been in the UFC for 4 years now. CM Punk has had a contract for 4 years, and he's been in Chicago as well. So maybe you have a point. Maybe I should back off. Maybe you could beat my ass.
Well, Andy seems like a big guy. Like, I don't know what he walks around at. Like, probably 205 regular. That's big, right? 205, that's a... I mean, that's not a huge guy.
I don't think
they're
that
big.
I think we're going to get there. So I got Coulter TKO round number one. I'm definitely going to put him everywhere. And maybe not. Okay, I'm going to put him on 70% of my cards because you can't screw over your night. They are heavyweights. It is low-level guys here. Who do you think wins this one?
I have Coulter KO round one as well. I just think the guys he's been, like, Tai Tuivasa, I think, is the next coming of Jesus. I'd love Ty Tuivasa. So getting knocked out by him, and then, yeah, Chase Sherman, but it was an elbow. It was an inside elbow.
He kicked his leg apart for two rounds and then finally got him with that elbow. Remember, he was kicking him all over the place? It was a brutal fight.
Yeah, I'm going to stay away from it all day. I might have it on like one or two cards, Coulter, KO round one.
Rashad Coulter is 8,700 against 7,500 for De La Roca. I think that I'm more worried about Anthony Smith getting a finish than Coulter. I think Coulter can get one easier for under 9,000.
Yeah, I'm staying away from both those guys.
Looking at it.
Another stay away. On to...
Because I think, honestly, Rashad could get knocked out just as easy.
Yeah, 100%.
So that's the reason it's a stay away for me. I need some points gathering. But probably that kind of... That quick, like, knockout, those, mm-hmm. you know, that's if you're going for number one. I usually like to always have a couple that are like, I always make my money back, and then I go crazy on like two or three.
You need those wild card cards.
Yeah.
You need those that is like, what? Nobody's playing. It's a contradictory play, and that's how you make.
In my opinion, this next fight we're about to talk about should be on the main card.
Pay-per-view, right? Mm-hmm. I would agree with this. Both of these being former title contenders at.
A title holder and a title contender.
And a title contender. Very true, very true. With Claudia Gadelha against Carla Esparza. These women are definitely the top echelon at the 115-pound division. The fact that they're on the FS1 preliminaries is mind-boggling. Absolutely. Rashad Evans, former title holder as well. On the FS prelims. So
I don't care about Rashad Evans. Keep that
no, it's
on
just
the prelims.
It's just seniority. It's seniority.
I don't want seniority to run my cards because then we're watching a whole bunch of cards with a whole bunch of old
Vito
fighters. Yeah, I don't want my pay-per-views to look like that. I don't want seniority to rule.
Might have a point. But
I understand about best fights being on the pay-per-view.
And this is one of the better fights.
And this is one of the best ones.
This is definitely a fun one. Gadelha 15-3 against Esparza 13-4. Esparza is a wrestler. Felice Herring, her number one training partner, coming out of the Team Oyama, having a good professional scene. Gadelha, being out of Novo Niao, she's now been in the States, I believe, at Top Team for quite a while now.
She's one of our little cuties.
Oh, yeah.
We love Claudia.
We love Claudia. Esparza, she's a nice woman. So she's a cookie monster.
That annoyed me from the Tough House days. I haven't been a fan purely because of her nickname.
I just always love Esparza singlet. She always wore a singlet.
Yeah,
in
I do
there.
Remember that.
I love it. But Esparza likes to definitely be a wrestler in there. She has active takedowns, being over like the 3 or 4 takedown attempts per minute. It is ridiculous. In the UFC, one of the more shoot heavy, takedown progressive type of people. Gadelha, though, can stuff the best takedowns out there. She has a mean double leg inside as well. And on the ground, Gadelha is an X-level black belt, where Esparza, I do believe she has a belt, but I don't think it's a black belt or the level Gadelha has been for a while. Striking-wise is where this fight, though, is going to really be a differentiator for me. Esparza is definitely the 1-2 punch combination where Gadelha throws 3 and 4. The harder hitter for me is Gadelha. The head movement on both of these ladies is, though, very slow. They both get hit more than I would like, but I do think this is going to end up being a ground battle, for better or worse, against Esparza. I do think Gadelha, even if she gets taken down, has more reversals and...
more strength.
Strength on the ground. Even though Esparza on the ground has more top control, she actually is able to have better top control, but she's more of that American wrestler where I say she'll get on top of you, not land strikes, and hold you for 3 rounds. Where Gadelha, if she gets there, she'll throw more punches and go for submission attempts. Esparza is not going to do either, other than the rear naked choke. I think a lot of people see it going this way, as I feel you are as well. This isn't going to be a close one. I think it might be a dirtier split than people think, but I got Gadelha eking out a decision. Give me a dirty split along the way. How do you feel it goes down?
Oh, Carlos Esparza does not like to be hit. And if somebody who doesn't really finish people can finish Esparza in under three rounds, it is Claudia Gadelha. JJ did it. Claudia can do it. Claudia has more power than JJ. Not as fast as hands, but the reason that Claudia's head movement even looks comparable to Esparza is because she's fighting KK and JJ Andrade and these friggin' heavy hitters that if you think of any of those people with Carla Esparza, she gets picked apart by all those people. Carla Esparza, she was a fade for me, and she kind of pulled it back together. I've never been on the Cynthia Cavillo hype train. I never jumped on that. So I saw it kind of going the way of Carla just having more experience in there, and I was not upset with that decision at all. The level Carla's fighting is completely different than the level that Claudia is fighting. So I just think you put Gadelha on every single card. She is going to finish the fight.
Wow. Wow,
she hits heavy.
She does.
And you know, and Carla doesn't like to be hit at all. Not that anyone, I hate when people, they don't like to be hit, but some people just turtle up and it's over. And Carla's one of those people.
I think you're making a great read right here. Claudia Gadelha, 9,400 on DraftKings.
Wow, they see what I see.
Against the 6,800 for Esparza. I was going to say Esparza might be the wager gauger, but Lesbo coming in heavy against, staying away from that, because if it's a quick finish, she's making 3 points. I was going to make a claim for the wager gauger, but I think you've kind of swayed me away. I do think it's a decision, though it could be a 30-26 type of a decision in there.
I know. Look at for real, though. Just put it in your head. And you're in two totally different sports. Esparza's last three fights were Cavillo, Moroz, and Marcos.
And she lost the split to Marcos.
To Marcos. That's worse than Chase Sherman, if you're going to put it in that kind of... And then Jessica Andrade, Carolina Kowalczyk, and then...
One more time. I love it.
Kowalczyk. Wait, Kowalczyk.
Is it...
Kowalczyk.
Kowalczyk is what I thought? Or is that... What, am I butchering it?
Kowalczyk?
Kowalczyk?
Kowalczyk.
Oh, we're both fucking...
Carolina Kowalczyk. That's what I thought it was.
Yeah, it's good job. Sorry.
You anyways, get out of KO round.
They are way higher level than Moroz and even Cavillo at this point.
Yeah, even your best friend Felice.
So.
But they kind of look like they could be sisters. It's kind of weird to me. They're the two.
Because they're both Latinas? Is that racist?
And now I kind of think they're.
I think Gadelha is way sexier.
She has a more feminine face, but Claudia has a cuter body to me.
I think Claudia wins in the face and the body by far. Have you seen, by the way, those Instagrams? I wanted to stay away from it, but you brought it up, so I think it's a good.
Claudia's body is so hot for a dude.
Ooh.
I'm not into women with that.
But like she was shredded.
She's super shredded.
She's shredded. That's where that
I think
power
she might be
from.
The most shredded in that division.
Andrade looked pretty good. No.
Felice is right under
Tisha
there.
Tisha Torres and Felice Herring are right in that boat too.
Tisha
as of late too. Is it getting hot in here or is it just me?
All right, we can move on.
All right, real quick one. Who is the sexier one here? We have the two coming onto the stage. Mirsad Bektek against Ricardo Lamas to the stage.
Whoa.
Ooh, who would you say off the top? Who would you willing to go on a date with first?
I would like Mirsad Bektek.
Oh, really? I'm a Latino lover, I guess. I think Lamas is the body. The body does it for me with Lamas. He's got a better body.
Yeah, he is a better looking guy. I think he looks like he'd just be more of a pretty boy in the movie, and Mirsad would play more of like the rugged superhero outback guy.
I 100%. I could see myself.
I like pretty ladies and masculine men.
So, both of these guys are veterans. Lamas, a long, long time at 145 pounds. The 18-6 Lamas, coming off of a devastating loss 4 months ago to Emmett in a knockout. I believe we had a underdog play there, right? With Emmett?
Yeah, that was gnarly.
That was huge, minus four. Devastating knockout. Mirsad Bektek, though, coming in off of a win to Garofalo Pepe, but losing to Darren Elkins a year or two ago, being one of the biggest, if not the biggest, comeback of the year. Bektek has been a longtime hyped guy, and Lamas is a perennial top five guy. Lamas will lose. Well, is he with getting knocked out to Emmett, I guess, as of late? Lamas is really showing here with his 36 years of age. Push comes to shove. I think this is showing where he's at in this point of his career. If Emmett can knock you out, I think Becton can, even though in that play, we had a great read with Emmett saying that that alpha male wrestling has his number. Becton is from where? American Top Team. Tends to keep on the outside, stay on the outside with his strikes, throwing a lot more kicks in there. His gas tank is what definitely failed him in there, was beating the living daylights out of all of the fighters other than Elkins. The damage was
he was really beating the shit out of Darren the whole time.
And then he gassed real bad. So it's that gas tank into the third round that really is where people can capitalize on him. And Lamas has that type of gas tank. The only thing I'm hesitant on is 4 months ago, that devastating of a knockout, I worry about. Though this just happened with Aljamain Sterling, and he shined with flying colors, no chin issues, so I don't know if Lamas is there as well. This is a coin flip of a fight. I'm switching every single day on it. Both of these guys, right there. I think Becton comes through. I think he's on an upward trajectory where, again, we've seen the best with Lamas. How do you feel this one goes down? I got decision,
Becton. Oh, I got Becton KO round two.
Woo!
4 months ago is right on that borderline until you're over 35 years old, and then it's just too close to call. You need more time off. In my opinion, Ricardo Lamas only took this fight to fight in his hometown, and I think that's dangerous decision making. So I think Becton sleeps him in round two, and I'm gonna put him on cards.
So Becton is 8,800 on DraftKings against Ricardo Lamas's 7,400.
Ricardo Lamas's wins over the last few years, in my opinion, are guys that I think are a little overrated.
I can see that. Totally.
Jason Knight and Charles Oliveira. And then his other win that he's had in the last, 2.5 years is Diego Sanchez. So that's what I'll leave that. Becton, KO round two. And let you say whatever you need about it, but I just had to be dramatic.
Nope. I think that was a dramatic point. I was just more switching over, messing with my mic here. I think the swivel's off. So, to the headline preliminary event, why can't I think of the proper title for this? The showcase fight for the preliminaries, we have the heavyweights, Alistair Overeem coming in against Chris Blades. Overeem, the Ream, has definitely taken a downturn in his career as of late, being one of the most knocked out heavyweights of all time in his entire career, being 43-16, most of those losses being devastating against the 9-1, Blades only losing via a TKO injury to Adam Milstead. No, that was actually overturned. He lost to Ngannou via cut stoppage, but has since then been on a run. He only had a fight due to an injury via disqualification.
No, not the cut stoppage with Ngannou. Ngannou killed him.
No, it
turned
was
him
a
into a his pez
eye,
dispenser.
His eye shut no, and the doctor stoppage.
Dead asleep.
No, he did that to Overeem. I'm talking about Blades.
Oh, sorry.
So they have a common opponent there. But we know what we're getting with the Overeem Dutch kickboxer. Nasty knees, great clinch, really likes to hurt you, has a good takedown on the ground. Pan Am Games will be able to submit you all over. It's just that chin. That chin is on a hair trigger at any point in time. The Nacho guy, Dos Anjos himself, can fart in the other room. And Overeem can go out. Blades, all heavyweights have that type of power. Blades is a little more durable in there. He's really shown us in fights that he can take it into that next gear and go to the third and fourth round. For anybody in the division, this young man is going to be more and more of somebody to worry about. I actually picked Blades against Ngannou, I believe. Only time I've picked against Ngannou, because I saw a long time ago with the takedown, the defense that Blades contains. It's only a matter of time till those hands come.
No, didn't you pick two against Ngannou with that
Henrique.
I'm always going to remind you.
Yes. So, been waiting to fade Ngannou for a bit, but I shouldn't have when I did, and I didn't
want
to. You
know, you were right. You knew somebody's ground game was going to be able to
was going to be able to beat.
Yeah, it just was the wrestling, not the jiu-jitsu.
So, I'm going to have to just bet against the chin here. Other than that, this is a stay-awake fight because Overeem has everything he needs to beat anybody at any given time. It's all about that chin. I got Blades TKO round one, but cannot guarantee that by any means whatsoever. I'm going to be tentative. I'll say I'll put this 60% of my cards.
This is scary, and this is the one I've gone back and forth with the most, and
We'll have it probably both guys on a couple of cards.
I totally see that.
I see, though, either a decision win for Overeem, because Curtis Blaydes has no idea what it's going to be like to go three rounds with a guy like Alistair. And Alistair's gone five. I do think Curtis Blaydes is the future of this division. I like everything about him. I just think all his skill sets, Alistair can stifle them. The only thing to worry about with Alistair Overeem is that chin. When I just look at the last few years, I'd like to think the champion beat you and the hardest hitting monster beat you. Okay, he knocked you out. Does Curtis Blaydes have that type of power? I don't know. He has that type of chin. Curtis Blaydes has a really good chin because he didn't get knocked out. He's one of the few guys that didn't just get slaughtered by Francis Ngannou. So I've gone back and forth. Right now I have Alistair Overeem decision, which may be the very first time I've ever bet on Alistair Overeem.
For a decision? How do you feel about this fight actually being put onto the headlining preliminary card on FS1? There was a lot of people making a stink about it about 2 weeks ago. This got moved, but Alistair Overeem and Blaydes themselves came out. Alistair Overeem saying, "What? I don't care." Blaydes saying, "I get paid, right?"
And I hate to say this, but do you think more eyes are going to be on this fight because it's free, or the pay-per-view? Like, maybe a lot of people will see him, and this is the most intriguing fight that if it turns out good, you're like, okay, let's buy it.
I would agree, though, that this is the right move totally by the UFC, because exactly what you're saying. We've both said that this fight's not going the way you have a decision. You're saying it's going
to
decision.
I think Curtis Blaydes could easily clip. I don't see Curtis Blaydes getting finished here.
So, this fight is one of those where it's going to be a barn burner. It's going to be a fun one. Heavyweights, either heavyweight and decision fight, or I guess that's anyone. But it is a way funner lead up into the pay-per-view than other fights by far, because there is a potential for fireworks. And I'd say, yes, more eyes are watching this free fight than on pay-per-view. Then we get to the pay-per-view. If you haven't liked and subscribed, you might as well. Either way, it is the worst opener for a pay-per-view that I have ever seen in my entire life. This is a UFC 0-0.
It's kind of smart, though, because it makes everybody that is going to buy the pay-per-view that is the casual fan.
Sure.
They bought it. They're more inclined to watch the whole thing.
Now that they bought it. So all these WWE fans. Because they're paying for this fight.
Yeah. So this hopefully, once they spend the $65 or whatever it costs, they're like, let's just watch the whole thing. And there's enough good talent on this card that really could be interesting to pull over some new fans. I'm trying to be optimistic on the whole CM Punk thing, because he is kind of every man, like, living the dream. It's like the same idea of like, no, I was fucking working at a grocery store and I just made hip-hop albums in my mom's basement and now I'm, you know, the biggest rap star in the world or whatever. It's like this, he's this every man, and if he had this dream and he would have done it maybe in his late teens or in his early 20s, it's a whole different thing, and his name got him there. But if his name is going to bring new fans over, okay. But I'm the person that if you want to put 50 Cent in the octagon, you want to put Snoop in versus Wiz Khalifa, fine. If it's going to bring over new fans to the sport, and maybe new listeners to Lesbo and the Bean.
So are you saying Tonya Harding has a shot?
I don't, maybe not Tonya anymore.
Oh, whoa. You don't need a black eye. You don't need any.
She made movies. She's got to be making some sort of money. She don't need to get.
So with the fame.
And there's got to be some for CM Punk. What is he doing this for?
He's got to pay some legal bills. Actually, he did just win, as of 2 days ago, a $1 million lawsuit against a defamation act that he, on his podcast, was claimed to have defamated some WWE employees and lost in court because they were like, he was bullshitting on a podcast. It's his opinion. And here at Lab B, we like to have our own opinions. So good for him, because that's bullshit that people are trying to sue you because you were talking shit about their company, which is what everyone knows happened. It was because he talked tons of shit on WWE.
If CM Punk wins, I'm going to have two Pepsis in my fridge. And we're going to drink Pepsi. We're going to drink it.
I'm going to get a sugar high. Just the UCM Punk. So the chick magnet himself is definitely coming in against another 0-1 UFC fighter. The UFC former photographer Mike Jackson is coming in at 33 years old against a 39-year-old CM Punk. He is, though, an amateur Muay Thai striker as well as Jackson. And Jackson, I believe, lost all of those amateur bouts as well. He won a split decision in an amateur bout. And that is not on his Tapology.
Shut up, because I just watched the whole embed and was thinking, oh shit, what are they doing to CM Punk? Because he was all like, you're getting in there with somebody who's done this before, blah, 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 and like talking. And I was like, what are they doing? I need to look up all his fights. And you're like, he lost all those.
He lost them all or won a split decision against the no-win-no fighter. So Jackson is there to just be, he's actually playing the route really well, I think. He's playing the role really well as far as being the guy that's going to come in and lose and talking a big game. He's done a big social media hype. He asked for this for a long time. We were talking about him a long time ago and said this should have been the right fight, 0-0 against the guy who's real garbage. And I don't feel bad about calling either of these guys garbage, because I would say I feel like I could beat either one of these fighters at 170 pounds.
I have to watch this fight before I put money on
it. And then the bean's got a shot, baby.
But I think what you're saying, hey Dana.
Fuck that. You're gonna be on a contender series fight. I'm done.
But he's not gonna want a contender tough guy to fight his golden boy CM Punk. True. He's gonna want podcast schmo that thought he was talking shit.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
He's never even done any MMA before. He has never wrestled. Like, this is who you want to fight CM Punk.
That's right.
So, at 170 or, like, 165, I don't think CM Punk can get lower. But 170, I would not, if I were your manager, I would not say that is your weight class. And I'm anti-cutting, but I'd be like, you can get some cut. I think that's your walking weight.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely have to cut. It's going to be a hard cut.
Unless you just let...
But we're going to videotape it like Darren Till. And we're gonna put black things up my eyes. I can't see.
You're gonna fall out.
I can't fucking see, cunts.
You're gonna fall out of the shower.
We didn't talk about that, and I've been meaning to, because the reason I hated that so much is because we were talking about it off air that they specifically put that up to elicit empathy from the viewers and say, oh, look at poor Darren Till. Look at the struggle. They should give him more money, whatever. But anybody who's anyone that knows anything is like, you guys showed your ass. He shouldn't be cutting that way or that hard. His coaches are lazy because they weren't struggling with him. They were just going into the sauna. There's multiple other baths, multiple other things. I know that there is diuretics you can't do anymore. But it was... I know he had external things going on in there, but... There was many other coaches that could have got him there that aren't Mike Dolce with other stuff. It just showed the bad coaching staff there in that. Did you watch that video,
yes,
obviously?
It did not elicit any. And I picked Till, and I had a, you know, still, I watched the fight over and over again. I still thought he won the fight. And then that came out, and I'm like, oh, garbage. I don't need to see this, Darren. Yep. This doesn't make me feel great.
Agreed.
Darren Till, I am not, and I was on his hype train, and even though he won, I'm kind of off it a little bit, only because until he fights a legitimate wrestler, I'm nervous about him going forward.
Oh, for reals. I totally agree 100%.
I think it's Till Usman. I think that's really the only fight to make next for both guys. I think everyone needs to see Usman fight one of these King Kong strikers, because he gets a lot of hate for that and having these boring fights. So Darren Till is going to give you that forward pressure the entire time to make that exciting fight happen. Right. And we don't have to talk about this shit. Look at it. It's like, hey, wasn't that the most exciting breakdown you've heard of the CM Punk?
About the CM Punk, right? Real quick, though, with Usman, exactly as here at Lap B, we were predicting, what about them broken hands? Most people I know with broken hands got casts all over them. Kamaru Usman coming out on the MMA Hour and being like, I got some fractures, which means you good. You good. Everybody's got some fractures after punching someone in the face for 5 rounds. Like, of course.
So, bare knuckle, good for the sport or bad for the sport? Real quick intro, it just made me think of it.
I want to say it is good for the sport, and I was against it initially. And after watching everything that happened, it's a fight I watch MMA. Sanction it. What it's what you do.
If anything, you're more likely to get broken hands fighting bare knuckle, right?
That's what everyone's saying, though, about bare knuckle making it actually safer for your hands, yeah, because you don't throw those punches.
And maybe safer for the other fighter. Maybe safer for both guys involved.
Well, it changes the body shots as well and everything. And it, yeah. So, who do you got, CM Punk or the minus 185, 2-1, Mike Jackson?
This is purely on Rufus Sport. Yeah. Do I think they want to make money? Yeah. Do I think if CM Punk was a lost cause, they'd want to keep putting... This is the biggest stage. They're friggin'... I mean, we all know their camp. We all know about it. But this is the biggest stage it's ever been on. I gotta think these guys want to show something. And from what I see on everything, CM Punk has the commitment. He's showing up every day. He's working hard. And those same videos that we used to look at that were awful, they've gotten a lot better.
They were a starting point. And that's what I want to see tape on both of these guys, and all we've seen is embeddeds about their eating and going out in town. I don't give a shit, homie.
But CM Punk looks a little better. Did you see any of the training?
He did look fitter. He looked better than his last fight by far.
So I'm going with the camp knowledge mixed with the UFC business side has to know a little what they're doing here. I have to think they picked this fight for CM Punk to win. Punk submission round 3! Woo!
I cannot believe this. I can't believe this. This is unreal just because if we have a Leslie Smith CM Punk underdog pick of the week, this is a tragedy. This is a goddamn Roman tragedy. I'm going with CM Punk decision because the UFC knows some shit. Jackson sucks ass. CM Punk has been at a legitimate camp.
And Jackson can be submitted. I've been watching CM Punk's takedowns.
CM Punk has everybody in his camp that is with him will say he's not the best fighter out there, but they say that he is dedicated, and that's all you can ask for. It doesn't matter where you're at. Everyone's been saying top level guys that he's there. They don't talk about how
good
he is.
And I guarantee you Mike Jackson is not training full time.
What's the perfect storyline? And Mike Jackson knows how to sell a fight. If you listen to what he's saying, he knows he's coming in there to lose.
Well, because if he's really smart, if he sets up something big enough, then when CM Punk walks over to WWE, maybe he can join along.
That's exactly what I see happening as well. That's exactly it. So he understands CM Punk coming in and winning this lawsuit. What's the better story? He loses and blah, blah, blah. Or he gets 2 wins in a row and fucking rides on him sunset. Never fights again. Because CM Punk retires after this regardless, right?
I don't know.
Oh, Jesus.
I don't know. I don't know what's next for him. I don't know.
Exactly.
If he loses, he goes back to the WWE. And we still may see him again in 2 years. He wins, he goes back to the WWE. And we definitely see him again within a year.
If he wins, the only fight for that I see for CM Punk is Chris Cyborg. So.
I see the bean.
Oh!
But the difference will be between you and Mike Jackson. If you get that fight, you're training full time. You're Kobe. You're doing three a days.
I
just picture Mike Jackson still delivering mail during the day and going to train at night.
He worked for the UFC, though. He might be at the UFC training center, but I doubt it.
And he worked for the UFC. This is in my.
I gotta believe we ain't the only schmoes calling out CM Punk, and I'm not really cutting out CM Punk. Am I calling out CM Punk?
Yeah.
Oh shit! I'm calling out CM Punk. Who won't you, Pepsi boy? I'm going to get you because the cream rises to the top.
You'll have a Coke tattoo on your Coca-Cola classic.
That might not be fully permanent, but yeah, we can work with some. We might get sponsored there. So, though, we go on to the heavyweights being profiled again. Tai Tuivasa coming in against Andre Arlovsky. Arlovsky coming in off a 2-5 winning streak, being 27-15 against the 9-0 perfect record Tai Tuivasa. Arlovsky in the same situation as Alistair Overeem, where he can win this fight everywhere. It's all about that chin.
About that chin. No.
So, With that,
do you think he can win it everywhere, or we haven't seen enough of Ty's game?
I think Ty has enough in him being a New Zealander. We know those island boys always got a good chin, and Ty is no exception at all whatsoever. He's his gas tank has been his biggest fault. The only time he has been, he was a pro boxer as well, rugby player. He was finished in an amateur bout, which isn't on his record, and it was via TKO stoppage, body shots. Really, it was a gas tank, and we haven't really seen Ty's gas tank too much yet. He's been able to get those people out of there, and Andre Arlovski can drag it there. But I do think that Ty will be willing to eat two shots, land it overhand right, and this is a night-night for Andre Arlovski. Also, a fight. As I was saying prior to the show, there's a bunch of fights where people have come in to lose. Mike Jackson, one of those guys. Andre Arlovski, one of those guys. Alistair Overeem, one of those guys. Carlos Barza, one of those guys. How do you feel this one goes down?
Ty Tuivasa, KO round one. Exactly. I have no faith in Arlovski. Exactly. And the last two fights he's won, in my opinion, are against two guys that are not UFC caliber. I know everyone will be like, Struve? Struve? Yeah, I don't know what's going on with Struve. He's a big, long guy that never does anything. So I think he looks more exciting to sell the fight than it actually ever really is in there. So I think Ty Tuivasa is the real deal. And I see a brutal knee maybe to the sternum, finished with some punches, but the punches won't even need to happen. And it will happen in round one, Ty Tuivasa on 80% of my cards.
So for the 9,300... against the 6,900 Arlovski, are you going to be putting Ty Tuivasa? Is he the one you're willing to pay up for? He has a finishing rate of 100% in the UFC.
Ty is my guy. He'll be my stallion that I base all my other wagons around for my UFC.
He's drinking a local shoey, or they're going to have a prepared shoey for him?
A local. I think it's part of the deal. I think he just grabs someone's gross shoe.
Off of the sink. You ain't know those
out of it. And if you were walking by, would you pour it in your shoe?
100%. And I would wear that. I don't know if I'd wear that shoe, because I might have to drink a couple and then frame it. Put it up in my house behind.
Right here?
Yeah. It would be right here.
Ty Tuivasa's shoe. We should just have a shoe that we're saving there.
We should send him a shoe so he can do a shoey on his podcast and then send it back. That'd be dope.
That's a good idea.
Would it be clean or are you shoey? Because he apparently likes a dirty shoe. Which isn't what you think it means. It's not just worn. That means where people in the area spit into the beer.
Because he's that gross guy. He's that hardcore.
Rugby player, boxer, UFC fighter.
That's a man. He's a man.
That's a lad. That's a wee lad. Real quick though, we surpassed this. 8,600 on Mike Jackson for DraftKings against CM Punk's 7,600.
I think that's a crazy I think both guys should
coin flip.
Yeah, it should be a pick'em fight.
Coin flip.
That's crazy.
Do we have a Les Dog and a wage gauger?
I don't know. We have to see what the rest of it's like.
I'm so unbelievable. Outraged and just
did
shocked.
You think you were gonna have you would have the CM Punk and I would go with the other guy?
Yes. Yes, I was thinking I was going to be like, he's been training where this other guy had, it's just, unbelievable, unbelievable. So, on to a debuting fighter against a former title
would
holder.
Would you say the hottest, yes, hot, but the most hype debut that we've had in a really long, probably since Gaethje?
Megan Anderson, yeah. The debuter? I would say that she has come in with a lot of hype, and initially she came in to fight Cyborg, but due to visa issues, we don't know why, she ended up not being able to fight Cyborg, and instead they gave her Holly Holmes, because that makes so much more sense. That's an exciting fight that's going to really bring in the crowds. I love Holly Holm, but we know what she does. Move to the left. Move to the left. Run away. Kick, kick, kick. Holly Holmes, though, will set you up later on in a fight. In a five-rounder, she rarely tends to do her best work to that cardio effect. Megan Anderson, is the Invicta champion. She's definitely fought much lower competition, and they should have had, if they were going to have her fight Chris Cyborg, they should have had her fight not Holly Holm. There's just so many other fights that they could give her a win to then have her fight Cyborg to get a little more hype, where here, Megan's in a lose-lose situation for me. She's not going to, unless she finishes Holly Holm, which is way harder than people think, she's going to have a boring decision, and she's going to lose tons of steam. I don't know if Holly Holm can get Megan Anderson out of there. She can. Holly Holm can finish anybody, but I think this is going to more than likely end up being a boring decision. It's going to end up being a three-round, 29-28, Holly Holm, if not 30-27. I like Megan Anderson, but this is just too high of a level step up. Everyone likes her because of her size and what her potential, but her potential hasn't really been shown yet. It's still just potential. How do you feel this one goes down?
I agree it's potential, but I also think Holly Holm just doesn't pull the trigger enough to win a decision. And I think Holly Holm, what she has is she tends to be the counter striker, and this is by far the tallest woman with the longest reach she's ever faced. Yep. So being a counter striker on the way out with somebody that's really tight with head kicks, that's called a lot of people into her camp to train with them, I like every thing coming out of Australia right now.
Zealand or Australia?
Australia.
Oh, my bad. Because there's the Newsies guys.
Yeah, but I think they all train out of Australia.
You might be wrong. Sorry.
Like even Ty or fucking Robert.
Yep.
Like, but I like everything going on right now out of Australia, and I think Megan is. I actually think this might be the better fight for her to build up some steam for going against Cyborg to create real steam behind that fight, because Holly is probably the most steady name in the women's division, where it's just stayed, like if you had to put money on it, if it were a stock, it just has stayed pretty plateaued. It hasn't really dropped, even though she has more losses than anyone. Everybody still loves the preacher's daughter. So I kind of think it's a perfect person to build a name off of. And their styles, if styles make fights, you don't have to worry. Holly could take Megan down.
Yeah.
We never see that side of Holly, but she does have the experience in there.
Winkle John can, baby.
I hope Anderson clips Holly in round three, and that is what I'm betting on.
Wow, betting on.
Yeah, I'm betting on.
So you're going to go with the big underdog, Holly Holm, 8,900 against the 7-3 for, is it Megan or Megan? Because I've been calling her Megan.
It's spelled like Megan, but Australia, we don't know. They're Kiwis. It could be Megan. Holly.
So we're split there. Interesting one. We're both of these fighters are going to have many, many fights to come, especially along the way. More hyped for Megan Anderson later on.
This is a lot of a fight for her.
This is a way lot of a fight
Great
for her.
Great cardio. Somebody with no ring rust, no cardio issues, has gone 5 rounds 1,000 times, has been in under the biggest names, has been the underdog, has been the favorite, it's like you couldn't be going against a more solid person that we're not fading yet. So it's like a weird.
Exactly. Interesting. So,
I'm
not gonna put Holly Holm anywhere. I do think if there is a play there, it is Megan.
And Holly, points wise, even if she fucking wins, she's 37 points at the best. That's why her with decision worries me.
Exactly.
Betch Kohea might have landed more punches before she got knocked out. That is nerve wracking to me.
On to the interim.
This is the most exciting fight on the card.
I would agree, because in the number two that's coming up in the main event, number twos just aren't, decisions aren't that exciting sometimes. But this one, we got the number one heel against Rafael Dos Nachos. This is such a fun drama, big drama show. Colby Covington wanted a big fight. He got Maya. He wanted a bigger fight. He got Dos Anjos. Is bringing it. Dos Anjos is a bigger fight. I mean, this is for an interim belt due to the inactive 170 pounder. Colby Covington likes to use his wrestling to win fights. His striking has been getting better, but in his last major win, being 13-1, being against Damian Maya, let's not forget that 5-rounder. Damian Maya had Colby Covington's both eyes cut, one almost nearly shut. Colby's cardio looked good in there, though. Head movement still looked good. He was rocked in there a few times by Damian Maia. And Damian Maia is not a bad striker, but he's not good either. So Dos Anjos is a much, much better striker on the ground as elite as Maia. Maybe not as specifically dangerous, but is still able to shut all sorts of people down on the ground. What I think the biggest player in all of this fight is because when Covington gets to the ground, Dos Anjos can get this right back up and standing. I think Dos Anjos has heavier strikes and better striking. The biggest factor in this entire fight for me is leg kicks. Dos Anjos has devastating leg kicks. Ask Neil Magny what happened. Ask all these other fighters that are seeing Dos Anjos go for that outside calf and lower leg kick now. He's putting weight into it now at 170 pounds. And Colby Covington, being a wrestler, tends to lean really hard on that leg. I really have seen it more and more, especially when he gets into his wrestling exchanges. Colby, I love everything you're doing. Love to hate you. I'm going to keep watching. He's going to beat a lot of other guys. You got Usman, Ponzinibbio, all the other 170 virgins out there.
Do you think he beats either of those guys?
I think those are like split decision coin flip fights, but that's why I want to see them. I think either one of those fighters could win one of those. I think Usman is right along those. That could be a really boring fight there. But either way, I'm going to end up going with Dos Anjos in a decision. We have seen Covington go five rounds once and he looked good, but we've seen Dos Anjos do it multiple times. And at 170, his chin has looked better. His everything is firing on all cylinders. I could break this down for days and days and days, but I'm just going to go with the biggest factor, and that's the leg kicks. I think they're going to change the dynamic of this fight. Who do you have by the end of this one?
Yeah, I do think that Damian Maia pieced up Colby a little bit. I also think Damian Maia is a guy that's a 185-pound fighter, and he was fighting down at 170 in his hometown, and Colby easily stifled Maya's ground game better than any of the other fighters that he went against, T-Woods or Usman. Colby definitively handled that fight the best. Rafael Dos Anjos is coming off this hot-ass win to Robbie Lawler, and I know everybody loves Robbie, but I've been fading him for so long now, that doesn't mean anything to me. And he was unable. He had clean shots more than any other clean shots that I've ever seen in the UFC, and he was unable to knock out somebody I consider chinny. So I'm wondering if he may be a little pillow-fisted, and maybe he is a 155-pound guy, maybe a 160, maybe he's one of those tweeners. So I'm not really worried about him knocking out Colby here. I think the leg kicks could be dangerous, but leg kicks also leave you wide open for takedowns. And Colby's the bigger guy. He will be able to take him down. And enough takedowns will break your cardio a little bit. I actually like Colby just because this whole shtick he has going on right now falls flat if he loses this fight. I want to see Colby versus T. Woods just for my own intrigue. Dos Anjos, I don't think he is in the top three of this division yet. I know what everyone carries with Robbie Lawler's name, but that's the same kind of idea of like a Holly Holm's name. It's like, she isn't the top of the division anymore. So I got Colby decision. I actually think he could knock Dos Anjos out.
Wow, bold statements. I think you
and
have
the
a heavy
only reason
there.
There's a belt on this at all is because I need to see five rounds for this fight.
I agree. This is a five rounder. This is a
yeah, only because of the belt.
Yeah,
but that's so okay. I hate the interim belt. I don't know why it's there, but if this makes it a five round fight, perfect. Put a belt on it.
On DraftKings, we have Rafael Dos Anjos at 8,200 against Colby Covington 8,000. Being a five rounder, I think you could stack both of these guys. I think that they both could run up in that 50-60. If one of them decisively wins, he'll get something like a 80 points where the other guy gets like 50 or 40. I think that's at 8,000. That pays it off easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Colby's got that Florida personality.
He's an Oregonian. Thurston High School, baby. You been watching them Embedded?
Oh, I thought he was a Florida kid and he went to college in Oregon.
He grew up in Oregon, Thurston boy. Thurston High School, then he went to OSU, and then he moved over to Florida when he met Masvidal, all those guys. Well,
his boyfriend, Jorge.
Yep. Jorge.
That's the other big thing. I honestly believe Jorge is one of the smartest guys in the UFC. I think he not only has good ring IQ, but I also think he has good outside the octagon IQ. And right. I gotta think he's telling his boy who to take and who he thinks his boy can beat. I gotta think something of that's there.
So, anything left with that one? That's actually a fun one. I think that's the fun. Yeah. That's the funnest.
Yeah. That hurts me a little to say, but
what
I
would
just...
you say, though, of the night? The people's main event. It's got to be Colby Dos Anjos, right? That's the people's main event. That's the real headliner. We've talked about it before. With this number two being the headliner at 185 pounds, we have Robert Whittaker against Yoel Romero. Number two, Yoel Romero being defeated in the decision.
So you don't think Dos Anjos will fight emotionally at all?
So far, I don't think he has.
But what about when Colby's looking at him in the eyes and saying, what up, filthy animal, and all this crazy shit? And the fact, this is why I'll tell you I think you're wrong.
Okay, tell me. Let's hear it.
The only thing I hear Dos Anjos and his coach talk about is Colby. That is all I hear him talk about. This will add the extra steam to your workout today. Blah, blah, blah. Like, every single one of the embeds, that's all they talk about. I hadn't heard Ty Tuivasa bring up Andrei Arlovsky once. I haven't heard any of the other fighters talk about... I mean, Colby's just running his mouth about every single fighter in the UFC the entire time. Running his mouth about Joe Rogan, that's his shtick. But Dos Anjos cannot get Colby out of his head.
Interesting. I wonder if Alpaca sees the same thing you do.
Uh-oh, Alpaca, we're talking to you.
Talking to you, homie. Back to the main event, though. The number two could be going all over the mat with Stoolgate happening multiple times for one of these opponents in Yoel Romero trying to get after one fight in between his loss to Whittaker. Whittaker having to fall out a few times due to injuries, being 19-4. Robert Bobby Knuckles is defending the belt. I'm kind of all over the place, but I just want to get into real quick why we've been saying this card is so stacked and why it has so much limelight. Name any other pay-per-view or card for that fact that has this many former title contenders or holders at one point in time. How many do we have? Rashad Evans, one. Rashad Evans, then we had I guess Benavidez always just contended for it. Then we had Esparza, two. Then we had...
And if you want to just say contenders as well, Claudia. She fought for the belt once or twice with JJ.
I think twice with JJ. But in that route, Benavidez has fought 3-4 times for the belt because not only against him. Then we have... Holly. So that's two people.
Holly.
Holmes, former belt holder and contender all day.
Of two divisions.
Arlovsky, former belt holder of multiple divisions as well. Overeem.
You know what?
Contender.
You're really right.
Dos Anjos,
fight,
former belt holder.
There is, all you see is 226 standing behind this fight. But everyone that's like, I'm about to buy, this is going to be the first UFC card I bought and whatever. I might buy it just because it's so easy and nice to deal with not dealing with the stream fight at all. There's enough good cards that I want to see on the main to actually buy it. But if I were saving for two, it would be 226 all day.
Easily 226. Not easily, but I would say 70% I would say for it more.
I don't even want to break down Whittaker, Yoel Romero again.
It's going to be a lot of the same.
It's all the same.
You can watch the same five rounds. This is exactly what happened to Thompson Woodley. It's going to be the continuation of that. The output, the only fighter who's been able to outstrike Yoel Romero was Robert Whittaker. You can look that up by the numbers. Robert Whittaker was able to get up off of the ground. Yoel Romero is always that wrestler who can finish you in the fifth round, but Bobby Knuckles isn't taking him lightly. I love everything I've seen on the embeds, that whole camp. It really helps that they all can train together because they go in with a group mentality. And Yoel Romero, being as old as he is, it's really interesting that he's like, I'm going to keep going. This isn't my last fight, win or lose. I do think, though, that same with Woodley and Thompson, this is going to be another decision. If not, I don't see a finish happening, but I see it being more of a 4 or 5 rounds to 0.
Bobby Knucks.
Bobby Knucks putting it in, doing some more work. And then who do you got at 185 after that? Bisbing's out, so you're fucked. Who are you calling out? Not Michael Bisbing. As a champ, who are you calling out? Oh, Michael Bisbing! I love you!
I really think Bobby just sits back and waits for either Gastelum or Weidman to wake their way up again.
Which I would say are already pretty much there because it's lacking in a division.
Yeah, so, Bobby Nux. I don't even want to break it down again. I got to go around four for that. If I'm talking about my card and who I might put on one, the only one I would tell people to just be like, take it with a grain of salt from me because I just am having this high on Australia thing and that I could see myself swaying would be Holly. I do like that Megan's the natural 145er and Holly still craves the 135 division, but the UFC keeps throwing her here. Mm-hmm. But that could be the one I end up swaying on beforehand. As far as the Leslie Smith underdog pick goes.
That was the next question. That's what we're all here for.
I think we've agreed on one underdog. I think you have to say it, and you have to say it from the diaphragm.
coming in with the Leslie Smith underdog pick of the week. The chick magnet himself, CM Punk, coming in as our underdog. The 2-1 is ridiculous. This is a pick'em at best. We're thinking the training's going to be the factor. I hate myself. I'm going to have to go take a shower after this because I feel like I got a Pepsi contracted disease.
I'm
going
to have to do a shot of Pepsi. I got to get my Pepsi. I'm going to start drinking Pepsi throughout the week.
So
I'm
going to
have Pepsi cans. Damn it.
Got him. Hopefully we got you.
And then after CM Punk wins, the Bean. The Bean versus CM Punk.
You know we got you. We got you.
I would have you right now just thinking in my head, decision win.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Is that how you would see it going?
Hell no.
You see finish?
I see fatality round one. CM Punk
gets
his
submission.
Head stuck on a pole.
I just think that you would feel comfortable in your ground game after even taking one or two strikes that you'd be like, oh, I don't need to do this. Oh, this guy doesn't know anything. I'm going to do this
I think actually his ground game is probably going to be better than whatever, but that lack of wrestling I have, I think, is going to really show.
And then if we beat you, we'd say, he hates Marines.
Oh, well, then it would be a hate crime. Then it would be a hate crime, for sure.
All right, that's it, I guess. Make sure you're liking and subscribing, and thanks for listening again.
That's what the Bean!
Thanks for listening to Lat B. For all things Lesbo and the Bean, head over to lesboandthebean.com or follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.